Hello, and welcome to Roll for Topic, a roundtable discussion about topics related to running role-playing games. I'm Chris Salzman.
And I'm Andy Rao.
Andy, it is officially fall out here, and I don't know if I was ready for it. It sort of hit this week, and I just felt myself sort of like going into a cocoon of hibernation all of a sudden.
I don't know what your experience of living in Michigan is like, but this is mine. Starting in like August, there will be like a beautiful autumn day.
Yes.
And you will think that autumn is here. And then the next week will be like 96 degrees and humid, yes. Straight for a week. And it will keep doing that. And I think it can't get hot and humid now. Mm-hmm. But this is how it tricks me every year. So maybe this weekend will be a blisteringly nasty weekend. So yes. I don't know. I don't trust it. I want fall to be here. I want to embrace it, but I don't trust it.
Yeah, it does feel like the weather is rolling sort of on a D10 table at the beginning of every day. It's just like, well, here's what you're going to get. Yeah. But anyway, so I bring up the weather because I want to bring up fall, and I bring up fall because we wanted to talk a little bit about like running holiday games because we're starting to get into that holiday season.
Yeah.
Stuff. But I think before we get into that, you mentioned that you had something real quick that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, I just wanted to two quick items. One is it is like RPG Kickstarter extravaganza season. Like I don't my wallet started buzzing in terror starting about a week ago as like announcement after announcement. You had like I think Ars Magica, there's like Monster of the Week, there's Vassin, there's Trail of Cthulhu.
Don't forget Discworld is coming out with an RPG.
There's Discworld.
I know that's not your thing, but a lot of people are excited for that one.
So there's a GURPS Discworld RPG that's been out for maybe 15 or so years. And I it was on like my local game shelf, you know, for a really long time. I think because I can't imagine it sold well. It's like, I mean, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I would flip through it and it looked really fascinating as a game setting. Like, cause whatever page I flipped through, there was something kind of weird and interesting about the setting.
Yeah.
But not enough that I, you know, plunked down that I would run it in GURPS, you know. So have you read a lot of Discworld stuff?
Yeah, so I was just going to ask you the same question. So I've read a handful of things in Discworld. So like the sort of like the core ones, I think like Color of Magic might be the first one in there. So I've read a few of those. And then there's a series in that world about Tiffany Akin, who's sort of like a young tween witch,
okay,
if you will. And that series is phenomenal. Like little, like, I think it might be a trilogy, might be longer than that, but yeah, we've read a few of those and really enjoyed them. Yeah. My guess is, so knowing you are not a fan of like punny fantasy, right?
Well, yes. So here's my confession, and you, Chris, and listeners can beat me up if this merits it. So starting at a very young age, I just associated Terry Pratchett and Piers Anthony as like kind of the same person.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Like, so like, I don't know why I did this, but like both of them looked like they fell in that like punny pun title category a little bit. And that's not my thing. Mm-hmm. So, even though I now know that I think Piers Anthony is much more of the like bad puns for titles author, and Pratchett is maybe, I don't know, a little more like, I don't know. I've been forced to confess that I've been judging Terry Pratchett maybe unfairly for like 35 years. So.
Yeah, I think you might be. I think you should read a Pratchett book. And I'm sure if you ask around, someone will give you like the definitive, like, this is the one to start with. You should never read anything by Piers Anthony.
okay. And to be clear, I haven't. So
yeah. And this is spoken to someone who like absolutely loved that author growing up. And then I recently reread, I think just one of them. It was On a Pale Horse. I reread that and was horrified, like just absolutely horrified at what was inside. Right. Like most of it just sort of like missed me. Like when I was, you know, younger. Yeah. Reading it, but like reading it as an adult, especially in like, you know, 2018 or so is when I reread it. It was just like, oh, okay, this is just horribly misogynistic. Like this is awful, like really awful you know, like not really well written, but yeah. he has such strong sort of like ideas. It's one of those things where it's like the pitch for it is better than the novels themselves. So yeah, it's funny. I'm not really on Goodreads anymore, but I had written a review of that book after and put it up on Goodreads, and like every once in a while I'll get like a like or a comment on that if someone has the exact same experience that I did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe listeners, maybe just leave that safely in your youth and never look at it closely.
Yeah, it's always dicey when you reread stuff like that. I mean, like, you know, especially my daughter's getting older, so we're starting to do the like, you know, so she's 9 right now, so we're starting to like pick up the books that we loved as kids and trying to read them with her. Yeah, it's like I'm just like I don't know how this one's gonna go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've had that experience revisiting some fantasy that I read in my youth, and there's, you know, I'm not going to go into it because I want to keep this a lighthearted conversation, but there's just like themes that were in books back then that, like, I'm not going to say it was wrong. It's like mm-hmm. that you can't have those themes in a book, but why were these themes in like 40% of the young, like yes. kid fantasy novels I read? Like, why? Yeah. You know, I'm trying to be vague here, but
yeah,
times change and people change. And I was going to say, so I did read the Good Omens.
Yeah.
Which Terry Pratchett co-wrote. Neil Gaiman. And yeah. I mean, I enjoyed that. I think most people regard that as a pretty fun book.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, maybe you can help me out a little bit here, Chris, or point me to someone, an author that will help me break through this, but it's like, so I moan a lot about like puns and stuff like mm-hmm. that, but what really doesn't catch me about a certain type of fantasy is I don't do really well with like whimsical fantasy, but there's like whimsy in it.
Yeah.
And like, so even like Harry Potter, like I've never been able to read those books
mm-hmm.
Beyond the first one. I don't dislike that they have like lighthearted fun elements, but there's mm-hmm. something a little like just, I don't know, a little whimsy goes a long way, you know? And, I don't know, does that make any sense?
You're like,
guessing that Pratchett is a somewhat whimsical style fantasist or no?
Yeah. Yeah. So you're sort of like after the second spell that sort of does, you know, make something kind of fly around the room and you're like someone fall down, you're like I'm out.
Yeah, yes, exactly. It's like you know, a little dusting of sugar on your Cheerios
yeah
is great, but like a spoonful of it and it's awful, right?
Yeah. I think you are correct in that there is whimsical elements to Pratchett, but I think what you might be surprised to find is there is a real depth of sort of heart and understanding of the human condition in there too, which maybe that will not outweigh some of the whimsy in there, but I think it's like in a strange way, like it's whimsical, but there's like a cohesiveness to the world that I think is maybe absent from other genre fiction in the fantasy world. I love Harry Potter, like Rowling's terrible, but like Harry mm-hmm. Potter is like, that's something I grew up with and I've read them and reread them and stuff. Rereading them right now with my daughter. And like the whimsical like product placement-y stuff in there is grading a little bit. I mean, now
yeah.
you know where you know it didn't before.
I never want, if you're like budding fantasy authors, if you're writing a chapter about how they go to like the magic candy shop, like strike that chapter from your
yes.
book. Like, just I don't want it. I don't want to hear how like silly the flavors are. Like
Yeah, Andy, so when you go to like, when you go get ice cream, are you just like vanilla, that's it? Or ever getting Superman ice cream? Are you ever getting anything with nuts in
it? No, I get vanilla ice cream with fudge on it. Like, okay, because, I mean, like, have we improved on that? Like, has all this new ice cream technology that you see in like the hundreds of flavors and varieties, is it better than like a fudge sundae? Yes or no?
I
obviously the answer is no.
Yeah. Okay. I think we've diverged quite a bit. This tangent is going to lead to our friendship ending, I think. this is good. I think you should absolutely read something by Pratchett, just so you can say that you've read something by Pratchett. Ask around to find out like sort of what is the best one that's not going to just immediately make you upset at the whimsy in it. But I think, you'll find, there's a reason people like Pratchett even into their adulthood quite a bit. Yeah. I think there's a reason why maybe you don't hear as much about what Piers Anthony is up to.
I mean, I don't even know if he's alive or not. I don't know anything about most of these people. So please don't take offense if I'm just bashing the author that like saved your life when you were a child. That's awesome.
Yeah. Caveat. Yeah. Right. Like it's, we are but lowly fish in the sea and they are monsters of the deep.
I just read like four like alien movie tie-in novels. So I don't get to judge anyone's literary taste. So.
Yeah. Your moral high ground is somewhere at sea level.
Yes. only one of those four novels did I say this is too bad to finish reading, right? So, but one of them didn't even meet that bar. So,
okay.
I assure you, ladies and gentlemen, my bar for aliens fiction is very low.
Very low. Does it have an alien in it? Yes. All right. Well, let's. I think that's really good. Yeah. Do you read something by Pratchett? We'll check back in on this in a couple months or so to see.
Sure.
See
can if I, you've done it. Yeah. Can I throw something else at you real fast? Because I know we're kind of championing getting our topic here. But so I just saw there's been some like news and scuttlebutt about the new 5e Dungeon Master's Guide, which is coming out.
Yeah.
And the news I saw was that the Dungeon Master's Guide has like contributions. Like, I don't know what that means. If they wrote a chapter, if they like reviewed a draft or something like that by prominent like streaming personalities. And I thought that was kind of interesting. And like, I don't know why I hadn't thought before that, like why, I don't know. Maybe this is the first, Dungeon Master's Guide where that's been created since the era of like streaming has thoroughly come to be a massive presence in the hobby. Right. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. So like, how does that strike you? Does that sound right? Like, and who do you want to like have a voice in a Dungeon Master's Guide in like Chris's perfect Dungeon Master's Guide?
Oh, wow. Yeah. I think it strikes me as very much the correct move. We've talked at length about this before. It's like, I don't think you can separate D&D from actual plays these days, like, cause it's just so, so massive. I mean, it's, you are probably more likely to find someone who's watching Critical Role than to find someone playing D&D, right? It's like, it's just huge. So it makes total sense to get Matt Mercer to come in and write a chapter or write even a small blurb or something. From a pure crass product standpoint, I think you want them, you want Mercer, you want somewhat like some of these other big names just to have their name on the product, right? So they'll probably mention it, like, things like that, right? So there's lots of like good reasons why I think from like a marketing standpoint to do that. From a like, hey, we are writing a Dungeon Master's Guide about how to run D&D, I think it makes a lot of sense, right? Like, so you have these people who have managed to find a way to create super compelling stories that lots of people enjoy, and run D&D in their style really well. And I think that's very valuable information to have. To my knowledge, though, this is the first time other than maybe Gygax where like there's going to be a sense of like, I mean, maybe authorship or presence of a GM like in the DMG, right? Like, and that is pretty compelling to me, because I mean, I think there is a way to do the DMG, which is almost essentially like, hey, here's a chapter of information where we have like, here's how to, I don't know, whatever, this is the Pantheon, right? And then you have sort of like five responses in there from people that know what they're doing about like, this is how I use it in my game. This is how I use it in my game, right? Like, because I think that the value for the DMG should be that sort of like advice, like, oh, like I have this thing coming up, I'm gonna flip through this and like, what do I do with the Pantheon? Like, here's five different takes on it. Like, so here's like the official rules, here's five different takes on it. I can kind of find my way through that. And like, that to me is pretty cool that we've gotten to that point in the hobby. I think you can very easily then start to quibble about like, who should those people be that are doing the contributions?
For sure.
And that's where I don't really care, but I think other people care quite heavily.
Yeah, I don't know what the process of creating the GMG is, but you know. So yeah, I think this makes total sense from Wizards' perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be honest, like I don't know how much insight or value I'll glean from all of mm-hmm. that part of it, but it's part of the game, and like I'm not everyone in the hobby. So yeah, I'd like to think that, you know, I would love it if Wizards just found 20 people that have been running a D&D game for like 10 years.
Yes.
And flew them into headquarters and interviewed them, or mm-hmm. gave each of them the same list of questions to answer. And like, because like it's, you know, I want, yeah, it's that experience of running the game. In the same way D&D is hard to learn straight from the rules, you learn mm-hmm. from the experience of playing it. I mean, if there is a way to, you know, capture that experience maybe a little bit better than past iterations of the rulebook have done, you know, like anyone with a little bit of experience can write a passing chapter on like what elements go into a good adventure. But like, how is that answer different if you've been doing this for 10 years every week, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. You might have a different take on it. I mean, you kind of almost like want like a, I don't know, here's 10 different GMs sort of answering those questions, or DMs answering those questions. But then also like you want like a slice from different styles of play too. It's like, you're like, yeah, here's 10 DMs that, you know, meet weekly and have a projected battle map and minifigures. Here's 10 GMs who like have never heard of any of those things. You know, like that's here's 10 GMs that only run one shot, right? Like, because there's so many different styles of play. It's like, you know, I think there is a sense that, I mean, right, we've talked about this before. Like, everybody feels like there is a correct way to play D&D that they're not doing.
Yeah.
Right. And then there's sort of like, there's the correct way and then the way that actually works for them at the table. And like, I think, you know, right, like whatever Wizards of the Coast, like, you know, wants to push is sort of like, this is the way, like the way to play. Like that's, you know, it's a prerogative, right? They can write the rule book in that way. But I mean, as I think Splatbook has gotten into quite a bit, Splatbook podcast, like they've talked about like how like D&D is sort of yours. Like once it hits your table, like the rules are a separate thing from like what you actually play at the table. Yeah, so I don't know exactly where I'm going with that, but like, yeah, there's something there. There's like a friction there, and I think they might be trying to get at that with like, let's bring in a couple GMs to talk about this, right? So like, we have sort of the Wizard of the Coast way, and then hear some advice from some other people.
Yeah, too. You know, almost as I said it, and then your comments helped me realize this. You know, I actually don't want just that a bunch of crusty GMs who've been running their campaign for years. I want some, you know. I also want to hear from someone who runs a killer game every Christmas, and that's it, right? Like, and because that's not a wrong way to play D&D, mm-hmm. you know? So, I mean, but even just choosing who would write into a Dungeon Master's Guide and what you would have them talk about, I mean, requires, it requires making judgments that, you know, that are hard. Mm-hmm. So. Anyway, I hope that the new DMG is good and helpful for people. It's like everything I've read, despite my kind of irritation with Wizards, everything I've read makes me think like they might be onto something kind of neat with this Dungeon Master's Guide. So mm-hmm. who knows?
Yeah. I mean, I'll probably end up picking up, right? Like player's guide just accidentally happened to me. So I'm sure the DMG will too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Right. Cool. Accident. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, speaking of running killer like holiday games,
mm-hmm.
That is what you have been up to lately. Is that correct?
Yes, killer holiday games. Yeah. So, we were kind of talking about like what did we want to talk about today, and so I just finished running, it was a couple days ago, I ran a one shot for Splatbook. So the Splatbook crew. So, mm-hmm. so John, Corey over there, and Jess and Ben, they invited me on to run this one shot, and so it's not live yet. I think it'll go live on maybe Halloween itself. Or so, but you know, towards the end of October, so
that's pretty high praise. I mean, it's one thing to get invited to like play on a show, but when a group of like really good GMs like that crowd is like, we need Salzman to GM our game.
It was a little alarming getting that request. So I just said yes immediately, and I will sort through the ramifications of what that means to my ego later.
So it was
really fun running for it. I mean, it's like, you know, they're ideal players, right? Like they all run games. They're really excellent as players. It's a lot of yes anding, like a lot of, you know, just all the sort of things that you'd want out of players, like lots of creativity and stuff. So like that part, super great. Like, so they'd written a rule set for this game. So they're doing a thing where they designed a game sort of on air, and then they're going to have this actual play go out to. So I've not heard that podcast where they designed it, right? So I just got the rules. I was able to make some tweaks and stuff like that.
I don't know how public info this is or whatever, but can you give us like the elevator pitch for the game rules system that they designed? Like what is it trying to do?
Yeah, I will be intentionally vague because I want them to be able ones to really say it. So it you are playing as a bunch of ghosts trying to frighten people off. That aligns one of the most fun details of it. So you'll just have to go check out the splat book to figure out what it is. So it is, you know, so you're playing ghosts, you are intentionally like playing a Halloween game, right? Like, so this is what I've been thinking about right now, is sort of like the thought of these holiday games as sort of a genre in and of themselves. So I think we often talk on this podcast, and I think, like, you know, John's talked about on Splatbook, and like, this is the idea floating around that, like, in some ways, when you are playing a game, you are all saying to each other, I want to exist inside of this genre that we're going to be playing this game in for, you know, the amount of time that we're playing it, right? So we're playing a fantasy game, and it's important to me that it is fantasy. It's not like, oh, we start in a fantasy version and then we, you know, shift over to urban whatever, or like sci-fi, right? Like, it's like we're all kind of like committed to the idea of like this genre. And the thing that I was thinking about this time running this Halloween game, and I've run some Halloween games in the past but haven't really fully thought this through, is like thinking about it as a genre, or like as a tradition almost too, of like, you're running a Halloween game. So like, if you're thinking about that, like there should probably be something spooky, or at least spoopy about it. Right. Like you should lean into those things. Same thing if you're running like you mentioned, like if someone's running a really good Christmas one shot once a year in D&D, right? Like you would expect there to be Santa or elves or, you know, like, or trees or presents or something like that, that really like ties back to sort of like, yeah, what the traditions are of that holiday. And so I bring all this up because for me, I am not a horror fan. Like, I'm not really like a let's get scared sort of person. I don't really like spooky stuff at all. Like, I mean, if you've listened to this podcast, it's pretty clear. Like, and like, Andy, you are the opposite of that, right? Like, you are willingly reading 4 alien tie-in novels, which I'm sure we're all trying their best to be this sort of horror in the horror genre as well. So I found myself when running that game, and you might even be able to hear it in the edit, like having to pause every once in a while and be like, this is supposed to be scary. I need to like ratchet up the spooky factor of this. And like, again, like since I'm not really like, my mind isn't in this mindset very often, like I don't know if I was successful in making it scary at all, but I did find it like an interesting challenge, right? Like, so like when you run games, like, you know, like you're sort of always looking for like little ways to challenge yourself, I think, right? Like, and this for me was one. It was like, okay, well, I could describe this thing in one way, but if I lean into it a little bit more, you know, and try to like, you know, go one or two steps beyond what I might normally, like I can, you know, add something that's interesting to it, that's feels more Halloween-y than just me running a game where they all happen to be ghosts.
Interesting. And so you also ran a game at Halloween, right?
Yeah. A couple years ago, I ran one that was more like a, so that was like a, what was it called? Oh, sounds good to me. So it was like it was like a TV show where you were playing the Halloween episode. Yeah.
And I could have sworn maybe it's the same one. Mm-hmm. Did you run something with lasers and feelings that involved?
Yeah, that was the same one. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So like with that one, running that, I, you know, like it was set at Halloween, and I think I used that more as set dressing than anything. Like I wasn't really intentionally thinking about like how to make this scary, right? That time. But this time it felt like there was a little bit more, I don't know. There's something there that I wanted to grab onto.
Yeah.
I just talked a lot. Do you have any thoughts?
Oh, well, did you make it scary, this most recent game?
I think there was a couple moments where I did. I don't think I made it scary the whole way through. And I don't know if, I don't think that's a bad thing necessarily for the vibe that Splatbook was going for that. And I think if they'd wanted to really make it scary, they would not have invited me, invited me on.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just not exactly where my strengths are, but like, yeah, I think there was some success there. And I did find myself like thinking about that session and the points where I tried to make it scary. Those are the ones that really stick out to me. It's like, oh, like that, there was something kind of cool there. I wish I had done more of that or tried to set up more of that.
That's interesting. Yeah, I hadn't thought like it makes me, I'm sorry, my thoughts are a little scattered here, but I'm intrigued by the idea of gaming as like syncing up with the rhythm of the year in some way, you know. I don't even know what I mean by that exactly. In at least here in the US, we kind of have this problem that like most of our like quote fun holidays are like packed in like the final yes. quarter of the year.
Yeah.
And the holidays that happen earlier are kind of the more solemn ones, you know, like mm-hmm. Easter or you know, I don't know, Fourth of July solemn. I mean, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I'm kind of intrigued. I would be interested thinking about like a long, like an ongoing campaign that went throughout the year, like syncing up to those kind of touch points
yeah.
without like shifting. So it's not like we're going to stop playing D&D because it's October. We're mm-hmm. going to switch over and we're going to play Vampire. It's more like it's October that, you know, so whatever we're doing in D&D is going to acquire kind of that acquire that vibe mm-hmm. of whatever it is that autumn, fall, Halloween means, right?
Yeah. Have you done that in any of your games before where there's like kind of a special session based on what's going on in the real world?
No, mm-hmm. I don't think so. I mean, I've run plenty of what we call holiday one shots or like mini campaigns, but that's different, you know, that's explicitly different, I guess, than what I was just describing. So no, I have not done that.
Yeah. I think I did years ago when I was running the lunchtime D&D game. I did have a diversion around Halloween where they went into like a haunted house and had like sort of a whole thing where it was like, it was a very like ham-fisted, hey, you step in a portal sort of thing. And like, now you're in front of a haunted house yeah. That you have to solve. And like, that was fun. Like, it was fun to sort of do that. I think it might wear thin if you did it for every major holiday, but it's also like, I mean, I don't know. I think there's definitely something to it. Like, as far as I know, I don't know anyone that does like a Thanksgiving game, for example. Yeah. There's probably something you could do there. I don't know. Like, that holiday might be a little bit tricky to do. But I know a lot of people who do that try to do specific stuff for Halloween and for Christmas, right? Like, those are sort of the two standouts that like I think really grab people's attention for. Oh, I'm going to run a holiday one shot, or I'm going to do something sort of fun in my campaign. For it. And I think by and large, whenever I've done one shots, I think they are sort of successful because people are in that, like, again, like going back to that genre where they're sort of like in that genre mindset of like, yes, it is, you know, it is Halloween, it is Christmas. Like, these are like the touch points. Like, I know we're going to see candy canes, you know, this Christmas one shot somewhere. Like, that can be really exciting.
I think there's something that's really practical to it as well in that, mm-hmm. When holidays come around, I think we all give ourselves extra leeway to do something fun
mm-hmm.
or to like get into the season of whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, even if you aren't thinking about this consciously, I think it's like probably easier to gin up like a Halloween game mm-hmm. than it is to gin up a game in like May. Right.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, I don't think that anyone, and I think you can be that way without anyone kind of calculatingly do it on purpose, but
mm-hmm.
like it's a holiday. Holiday, we do fun stuff on holidays. D&D is a fun thing. Let's have D&D be our fun thing this holiday. I think there's something about that.
Yeah, there definitely is. I think like when so like I found when you're trying to find players for like these holiday one shots, it's often a little bit almost easier too, because like the pitch is like, yeah, we're going to do this thing and it's sort of related to the holiday, so we can get together and have fun telling the story together. And it's like, yeah, like that sounds better, I think, to a lot of people than let's get together and watch, I don't know, White Christmas. It's like, yeah, like that that can also be fun too. Yeah, or like making cookies together. It's like, yeah, I don't know, like let's sort of lean into the stuff that we enjoy doing anyway. I think like my kids are like, you know, they're 9 and 4 right now, so holidays are very much still like parenting. you know, doing some like heavy parenting on those days. But I can absolutely see a future where it's like, you know, they're a little bit older and it's like, oh, Christmas Day, you know, we open presents, and then in the afternoon, like there's the, you know, the annual Christmas D&D one shot that we play or whatever.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Same thing with like, with Halloween, like, you know, just the way my schedule is going to work, I want people to play anything on Halloween. But in the, what was it, 2 years ago or a year ago, I played 10 Candles with some friends. And like, that was just, you know, like talk about a game that is specifically situated for a holiday. You know, 10 Candles is amazing. And it's like, I would love to just have that be like a tradition, right? You're just playing 10 Candles.
Yeah.
On there. Yeah. And I think, yeah, the thoughts that are sort of swirling in my head are just like, it's a lot of like this, going back to like what you were saying with like timing stuff to the calendar. It's like, I think there's like almost a yearning to have some of those traditions.
Yeah.
At least like where I'm at in my life right now, of like wouldn't it be really nice if when Halloween rolled around, like I knew there was going to be trick-or-treating, but also this 10 Candles game.
Yeah,
or like Christmas rolls around, it's like, oh, like I know there's gonna be presents and togetherness, but like we're also going to do this fun whatever, you know, like it, whether that's with the game that we're running, you know, already playing, or like the special thing as well. But I'm having a really hard time, to your point, thinking about like other than Halloween and Christmas, like what else is there throughout the year. And it's so I don't know.
I don't know that I have much to help you with there. This has also just gotten me thinking about the relatively little amount of attention I give to the feelings of parts of the game world year in the games I've run.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, like, festivals and holidays are actually pretty common, I think, in D&D type games, at least they are on the ones I run, because they're just like an easy way to create a big like spectacle or reason for the PCs to be here, or a focal point for the villain to, you know, enact their plan. But I think almost anyone, you know, you talk to anyone about, I mean, we were talking about like, we're glad it's fall. Like, why are we excited about fall, right? I mean, yeah, maybe we have a personal preference for like the temperatures of the fall or something like that, but there's this and so there's going to be some tangible reasons, or I like the color, the pretty colors when the trees change color, but there is phases of the year bring with them like this collection of cultural cultural yearnings, or almost. And you know, not all of them may be, you know, good or positive, but I think most people know what you mean when you say, I love fall, it's my favorite season. And they know you're talking about something that's a little bit more intangible than just, oh, Chris likes it when the weather is cooler.
Yes.
And I wonder how you would evoke that well in a game, because that's that's a part of being human, I think.
Yeah, it is. I'm reading The Left Hand of Darkness right now.
Ooh.
Which is just really incredible. And so it's
a great book.
Yeah, I'm like a third of the way in, and just like, I don't know, like it's so inventive, and it's really shocking to me that I think it was written in the 60s as well. So it's just like, anyway.
Yeah, right.
So I'm reading Left Hand of Darkness, and like it's set on this planet that is nicknamed Winter by, you know, like kind of the aliens in it. And like just thinking about like how your life would change in this situation where it's like it's just constantly cold, right? Just constantly cold. And like your summer, it gets up to, every once in a while it gets up to like 50 degrees or something like that. It's like thinking through some of those like ramifications. And I think like a lot of these seasons changing is sort of related to like, yeah, like you are you feel like you can do different activities, and like you can, I don't know, like, and like stuff just sort of makes sense in a different way. Like I yeah. mentioned very at the beginning of this episode, like feels like I feel like I need to hibernate a little bit more, or like to rest up and stuff. And it's like, there's, this is like a big change. And I think like if your campaign sort of just doesn't ever address the fact that like, I don't know, snow is going to make you feel different about going on that yeah. long adventure. You know, like it's just, there's like all these, I think, little touch points you could bring into your game, or even just having like a, oh, we got to go do this adventure. But like, we know in like 2 months, there's this big festival. Like, so, you know, that gives you a time limit, right? It's like, I want to yeah. be back for the festival, or like, we want to make sure this is resolved because the festival is going to happen. And if that big bad is still running around, then we can't have the festival, right? There's like all this stuff, I think, that they can kind of start relating back to yeah. it. If you think about it,
you know, like why does pumpkin pie feel right in October, but yeah. it would feel weird if you made a pumpkin pie in like May.
And oh, I mean, that's horrifying. Why would you,
if you made
that?
One yeah. in May and you enjoyed it, you're a sicko, but like, you know, that, you know, obviously there's nothing wrong at all with doing that. So like, yeah. I don't know. Why do we all bake a particular types of cookies around Christmas? You know, like it feels right to do it. There's probably historical reasons why those, mm-hmm. you know, entered our cultural vernacular.
Yeah.
But here we are, you know, hundreds of years later, and it still feels right somehow to have turkey and pumpkin pie mm-hmm. in October, and it'd be weird if you had it in May again. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Man, you really hate May, but it's...
yeah, I do. Yeah. I have a... It is... Do I hate May?
I don't... Yeah, I think you might.
I might hate May. That's yeah. when... As, like... You will find yourself, Chris, as, you know, pardon us while we shift from talking about role-playing games to Andy giving dour parenting yes, advice. Okay. But yeah, you will find that there's this window of your life where you escape the rhythm of the school year. And then your kids get to about like junior high age and your schedule, your emotions, everything will be linked to this. So when I think May, I think... Oh man, that's like exam week for my teenager, you know, and that's just always such a miserable slog, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I mean, there's another thing to think about, right? In your games is sort of like, yeah, it is fun to think about the heroes having no family obligations, but it's also fun to think about your heroes. Like, yeah, what if they do have to get back for finals week?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I was going to say, you know, a number of episodes ago, I might have mentioned that, you know, one of the best things I did when in the year or so when I was running Masks of Nyarlathotep before mm-hmm. that went on pause was keep a really rigid calendar. And when I kept that calendar, like it was super helpful. Everyone should do it if you have a kind of a complicated and kind of timeline dependent campaign going on. But I think if I were to do that again, I would add to the calendar some intangible things instead of using it just to say, this is what happened on such and such a day. I might say something like, what are the themes of this month? Like, what's the feel of this month that I can just incorporate into scenes? Like, you know, what are the smells of this month, or what, like, you know, what are those intangible what are, you know, those like yearnings that we all sort of culturally slide into in this month? And I don't know. I mean, who knows? I don't think it would hurt. So I wanted to mention, Chris, this is a quick aside. Left Hand of Darkness is one of those books I like avoided reading it for a really long time because I thought it was going to be annoying. You know?
Okay.
And like, do you ever have, you have those books where you're like, that's an, I know that's an important book on, and it really delves into topic X, Y, or Z.
Yeah.
And I just am not up for, you know, but I'm not up to be like lectured about whatever this is, you know, but, and then you read it and you're like, why did I not read this 20 years ago?
Yes. So, yeah.
And if you're thinking about, you know, if you haven't read that, that's my favorite Ursula Le Guin book.
Yeah.
I don't know about you. But
yeah, so. I think I'd had that about Left Hand of Darkness. I think I thought it was going to be something very different.
Yes.
Yeah, different than what it was. And like, it turns out like, oh, actually, it's just like it's a super good fantasy
yeah,
novel.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Like, yeah, super, super good. Like, right. I think it, like, she even has this introduction where she talks a little bit about like how it's gotten this reputation as being very progressive and like saying mm-hmm. something about culture. And like, if you read nothing else, I think reading that introduction is actually really worthwhile, because she's just like, don't listen to novelists. They just like to lie to you. Like, yeah. you know, like there's nothing, like I just made this up. Like it's, yeah. you know, yeah. Like I wasn't trying to be like this really progressive person. Like that's great that it is, but like, it's just, this is the story that I was trying to tell. And it's a bunch of lies anyway. So like, don't really try to apply it to your life. But I think she's sort of also doing it in like a winking, like,
yeah,
but also maybe think about
it. Think yeah. about that. Well, that's exactly, I mean, if that was her intent, that it worked exactly, because, you know, I went in thinking, oh, this is like, people like this because of kind of its approach to certain, like, you know, values and stuff like that. And I probably will agree with them, and I'll just be kind of irritated. This will be sort of a slog, but no, it's like, it actually is just a great story. It absolutely merits unpacking it and diving into those issues mm-hmm. that it talks about. But first and foremost, it's a good story. So
yeah.
anyway, sorry about the Le Guin aside.
That's fine. Yeah. All right. Well, we should wrap it up. We've both got something to get to, but yeah, this was good. Thank you for humoring me on talking about that a little bit. I think
it's for sure. It was interesting.
Yeah.
And we have our book assignments. I have got to add Terry Pratchett to the list.
Yes, you do.
First, I have to get through Moby Dick. Then we'll talk to Terry Pratchett.
Yeah. Moby Dick might be the last book you ever read.
It's possible.
I just never finish it.
It's going well so far. I still am not to like the, I still haven't hit any like massive details about like the mechanics of whale processing. So I don't, I'm flying high right now.
Yeah.
Ask me next week and maybe I'll have hit that chapter.
Yeah. You'll probably be super into it when it happens. Yeah. All right. Well, that does it for us. We've been Roll for Topic. We are part of the Roll for It Media Podcasting Network. Our sister show, The Splat Book with John Corey, is really great. His co-hosts Ben and Jess have been killing it too on that podcast. As I mentioned, I kind of alluded to, so they've got kind of a busy October. So I'm not even going to try to go over their full schedule, but do check it out. I know I was talking with John a little bit. He has, I think, three really amazing episodes lined up for the rest of October. Although I guess at this point it'll just be sort of two remaining ones, but anyway, go check it out at thesplatbook.com. Oof, almost got that wrong, but yeah. But yeah, they're really great. I mean, you know, I love those people, but I also love the show, so it's well worth your time. But yeah, I think that does it for us. So
okay.
I've been Chris Salzman.
I've been Andy Rao.
And remember, if your player's having fun, you're a great GM.